Hello, and welcome to Motorpod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 586 for Wednesday, the 5th of December 2018, and I'm struggling to get my head around the fact that it is the 5th of December already. It is dark, it is wet. But good evening to everyone out there in Motorpod land. It's Andrew Corse here to bring you what will be our last BSB show for 2018. It's probably going to be less likely of a show, more of a organised natter with my good friend and colleague, Mr. Dave Neal. Good evening, sir.
I hear the ding, ding, ding-a-ling, ding, ding, ding-a-ling.
Oh, have you started yet? Have you been dragged around the shops by your better half?
Good evening, mate. Nice to be back on the show. Yeah, we have. We were in Manchester at the weekend for the Manchester Christmas market, and copious amounts of Guinness and a ridiculously poor football match on the TV at the same time, of which I'm still bearing the emotional scars thereof. So I know your thoughts on football, so I won't hang on to that one for far too long. But yeah, fantastic.
At some point you need to sit me down, maybe buy me some alcohol, and explain this strange obsession to sitting there freezing your ass off for an hour and a half watching people fall on the floor.
Thankfully, we were happily secreted away in the Tip Street Tavern in the northern quarter of Manchester. The football game that I was watching was on in Sheffield, so we were fortunate enough to watch it on the TV. But, you know, it was a nice Christmas outing. And, yeah, I'm starting to feel a little bit festive. How's life in the Swiss land? Are you festiving up?
It is now, because it's now turned cold. We've got some precipitation. So now when we wake up in the morning, more often than not, in the mountains just behind the Jura Mountains, are snow-capped more often than not. And we've even had one or two sprinkles down here by the lake as well. So luckily here they start some of the commercial stuff a little bit later than I was used to in Canada or in the UK, but it's kind of going full swing now. So all the village has got the Christmas decorations up, the trees going up as well. So yeah, I'm starting to get there. Beginning of December is all right for me. That's a sort of enough time, but you know, sometimes like in the UK, it's like mid-October
it starts.
You know, yeah. They've just got finished with Halloween and then it's like full-on Christmas.
It's right. Oh, and I can't do the Christmas until the month begins with the D. I got a few bits beforehand to try and be a little bit organised this year. Jen, I was over at Jen's this weekend, so her tree and lights are up. My tree isn't going up until for another week and a half yet due to shifts and when Emily's over and when Jen's here. So I'll be full into the swing of Christmas kind of the week before the main weekend, which is enough for me, and then it'll all come down on New Year's Day because I'm back at work on the 2nd. So we don't mind. It's a Christmas. The Christmas festive feelings are upon us, but I don't think there'll be any shiny motorbikes under my Christmas tree this year.
Oh.
No.
Well, before we get into this, before we want to start, actually, I might just ask you to give me a hand here. Because before I start, I want to say a big shout out and a huge debt of thanks to a whole host of listeners and supporters who've been spreading some Christmas cheer of their own with their kind donations for us here at Motorpod. I want to thank Keith Kovac, Alan Fleming, James D. Pretorio, Magnus Krabbel, Nick Saban, Scott Sunter, Andy Meller, thank you, sir, David Johnson, Gary Shavitt, thank you, sir, Lester NG, Peter Newell, Stevie, and Warren Pon. All of you, thank you very much. A huge thank you from all of us here at Motorpod. In actual fact, to all of the listeners who were kind enough to donate at some point during the year. We really, really do appreciate it. Many, many thanks.
We're not worthy! We're not worthy! We're not worthy!
No, and I can only echo those sentiments. There's a few names on there. I know I've not heard due to me not catching as many shows as hopefully I could do. There's certainly some well-known names on there to us at the show. So to those guys, continued thanks. To the new guys that donated the names I haven't heard before, thank you to you guys too. And also, thank you to, as you rightly say, to everybody that listens. We've changed things around a little bit this year. It's been nice for me to get back into it as regards the BSB side. That is my main passion and has been for the last couple of seasons. I still watch MotoGP. I still keep up what's going on there, World Superbikes, and even Speedway when I get the chance, because that's just something else. That goes back to me being a toddler and on my granddad's knee and watching Ivan Major and Ollie Olsen in the sort of the late 70s. I still have a big soft spot for Speedway. But yeah, BSB's been where it's at for the last couple of seasons. Hope you guys like the little more in-depth side on the British Superbikes that we've been doing, and letting yourself and Len and the guys across the pond sort of concentrate MotoGP World Superbikes. And thank you for your efforts in the editing, and Len's as well, and to the guys across the pond for the work that they do. So on my behalf, for keeping the show going in the five-ish years that I've been here, apart from my little hiatus, thank you to you guys as well. It's a great show. And the more that podcasting becomes popular, I think the more beneficial we become. There's one or two out there. There's not too many in the UK at the moment. There's a couple of decent American ones. There's the guys who are in the paddock that Steve English and David Emmett do, along with Neil Morrison and a couple of others. They have a different view to us because those guys are in the paddock. They're in the media centre. They're in the throng of things. We still like this to be the pub talk. If I had a friend who was with me on a regular basis that we could shoot the breeze with in the pub, talking British Superbikes and dipping into other series as well, this is what I would want it to sound like. If you guys were sat round the table with myself and Ollie Rushby last Thursday at the Dam Busters Inn at Scampton. For those of you who know your history, RAF Scampton is where the Dam Busters flew from, Guy Gibson and the crews. We were in the Dam Busters Inn in the Scampton village last Thursday. So the conversation, as you can imagine, was all about British Superbikes, Ollie being the British Superbike reporter for Motorcycle News and a very, very dear friend of mine. So this is how we want things to continue. Hopefully they will do into the new year. But yeah, from me, thank you to you guys for listening. Anything that you think we can improve on, even if it means telling me not to bother, things like that, good, bad or indifferent, on the feedback is motopod@motopodcast.com. That goes to all the hosts, as always. We welcome your feedback, good, bad or indifferent, and we try to act on all of it.
I agree. Yeah, I would have liked to have joined you at the table with Ollie as well, because you know, bumping into some of the reporters is always fun, finding out, you know, the stuff they can't publish, they can't tell you about as well. Just kind of getting those little bit behind the scenes rumors and some of the did you knows, and that's always good fun.
It's entertaining because they also have Ollie and all the reporters do. They have riders they prefer and some that are more difficult. And it's interesting to know who is okay, who is not so okay, who you get a more realistic view of the riders rather than the view through the media. Some of the things that we knew already for being in the paddock on a reasonable level for 5 or 6 years now. When we go back to Jordan Weaving and then more latterly with Josh Elliott, and more news on who later on. As we go through the British Superbike lineup for next year, we had a plethora of announcements and official releases at the bike show. They did a British Superbike Day, which was the second Saturday that not the bike show. That's because I'm old. Motorcycle Live. It's not the bike show anymore, Dave. It's Motorcycle Live, to give it its official title and Twitter handle. I think, what's the show going for? Something like 9 days now. They have a TT day, they have general days. But this year, they had a full British Superbike day with as many members of the grid as possible there. Unfortunately, I was there on the Friday, so I only caught the Tyco BMW announcement, which again, we'll come to when we run through the teams forthwith. But it was a good day out. The show was a little bit smaller than it usually is, but it was no less busy for a Friday. Good turnout by all the manufacturers, plenty for people to see and do. It was a bit more of a social exercise for me, with catching up with a few friends that we'd not seen for a while, and so as we head into the winter months. But yeah, it was well worth a visit. And if you're over in the UK, if you're in the UK next year, give it a look. Just make sure you book your parking tickets in advance, because the NEC parking, £16 on the day.
16 quid, holy.
£10 in advance, woo.
And this was one of the reasons why we just waited to do this show, because we did know that, you know, a lot of the official announcements were queued up to coincide with this motorcycle live show. And yeah, we weren't disappointed. I think, you know, a lot of the formal announcements of teams and riders were made during that event. So like you say, you were there, so it was good to catch up. I know you say it was a bit small, but the fact they get 9 days out of it, you know, for what is kind of arguably a niche interest, a niche activity, I mean, I think that still shows you the sort of the depth and the passion that is motorcycling in the UK.
Couldn't agree more. Absolutely that. It was a better racing setup this year than I'd seen for a couple of years. Last year was a little bit lacklust on the race department, but this year everything had pretty much finished apart from... I can't remember if it was the same weekend as Valencia MotoGP. I think it was. Although I can't. Time has got... With the run-up to Christmas, time disappears so quickly. But yeah, I mean, all the British Superbike guys were there. There were some World Superbike guys around. And obviously guys from the roads as well. There was a big emphasis on the roads. There's a big emphasis on BSB. All the manufacturers brought as many race bikes as they could. The Valentino Rossi replica, the Marc Marquez replica. A lot of the British Superbike... official bikes were there. Johnny Ray's World Superbike was there. So yeah, and there was an awful lot of people, a lot of guys at the show making it happen. And not to mention that, but the trade stands, the manufacturer stands as well, were all well represented. And yeah, there was a good cross section of people. Not everybody was wearing team gear. It's not like, it wasn't like a British Superbike paddock or a World Superbike paddock. There was a few people who wore their own riders' colours. But I think they're well outnumbered by just general biking public. It was it seemed a really good show to me.
Let's kind of go through maybe what you think, like by team, for you know what we know so far of the 2019 grid.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, I don't know if we start with like the BYZ Ducati, because we already know that Scott and Josh have been out playing on their new toys, the Panigale V4.
Indeed they have. They were out at Jerez last Friday, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, it was great to start to get their feedback of, you know, Scott's first time probably on a road bike since God knows when. Pirelli tires, no electronics. And then, you know, Josh's take on this brand new Panigale V4.
See, I'm not wholly convinced about the electronics side. Purely because they were running Magneti Marelli electronics. They can't run Motec because they were the official... World Superbike Panigale V4Rs with the electronics turned down. I don't know if they can actually turn them off.
I don't know. On the Panigales, I'm not 100% sure, not having ridden one, if somebody would like to give me one so I can take it around Jerez for a weekend.
Sure enough.
Please give me a contact. But most of the, you know, most of the bikes that I have, like the, you know, the Aprilia and like the BMW and stuff like that, you know, these days you can normally turn them off.
You can. That's fine.
Traction control, zero. Launch control, zero. You know, all this sort of stuff to zero. For the, you know, the Scott Reddings and the Jeremy McWilliams
Absolutely,
the world.
I didn't know if they went to zero or if they just went to one that still left some in there. And obviously, still that the Magneti Marelli will be a little bit different to the Motec unit that they'll be using in BSB. But yeah, it's certainly given them a really good idea of what to expect. Maybe... I think using the Motec against Magneti Marelli, that means it'll have to be remapped. They'll have to put new maps in, new fuel in. They basically start from scratch, don't they?
Yeah. Luckily, though, there's a few different teams running the Panigale V4s. So, you know, Ducati, I think we've seen typically from the World Superbike and MotoGP effort, they're very collaborative. I think this is a new thing. You know, when Gigi came in, he really got all the different teams like pulling together, a lot more organized, a lot more organization of sharing information and sharing data. So I think, you know, as and when they make improvements with that, that will all be shared amongst all the V4 runners, probably in World Superbikes as well as BSB. So, you know, they're going to have a huge amount of information helping develop that bike pretty quickly. Plus, you know, it's had a good year testing now, you know, with their test team before it's been introduced as well. So that was Pirro riding that bike on from the test schedule as well. I think, you know, some of the feedback from Chaz Davis and Bautista's been out on it as well. You know, both of them talking quite positively about it, considering it is such a new bike.
Alvaro Bautista had a pretty great week last week, didn't he? He was out on the World Superbike V4 Panigale, and he was out on the GP19 Ducati MotoGP bike.
So he's got, like, you know, the kind of the best of both worlds in some respects, I think. You know, it's nice that he's still keeping his hand in with the MotoGP bikes. I don't know if that'll translate into a couple of wild cards for next year.
Yeah, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you? Pirro's had a couple over the years. Alvaro showing his level anyway through the tests. Are the guys going to cover the stateside guys going to cover the MotoGP review in the test?
Yeah.
I think we're going to throw over to those guys, to Derek and Jim and the guys over there at some point in the next week or two, hopefully.
Yeah, they're hopefully going to do a GP wrap-up, which I'm sure will include some of the latest news. Which, I mean, in some respects, you know, when you get to Valencia, the bigger news is not so much the GP, it's the testing afterwards.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. With the new guys coming in, Lorenzo changing over. And just one thing about that, that's the one thing in the new year that I'm really looking forward to the most in the motorcycling world, listening to what Jorge Lorenzo has to say about the RCV.
Well, and the Ducati as well, because, you know, he was expressly forbidden to compare the two.
Yeah, he hasn't been able to speak to the media at all because he's still under contract till the 31st of December.
Yeah, exactly, which is, you know, fine, fair and completely understandable. Absolutely and reasonable as well. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see because, you know how he always keeps saying, I tell the truth. So, you know...
Just like that, in fact.
Enterprising journalists, you know, can ask the right questions. In theory, you should get the right answers.
Absolutely right. There's a method in the madness there somewhere. Anyway, yeah, we digress slightly into MotoGP.
Again,
but then there's okay. There's plenty of time left yet. Don't
even
be worried.
Start and we digress.
The only thing we don't have is alcohol to fuel that. But after my Guinness exploits on Saturday, I'm maybe off that a little bit for now. So, Scott Redding, by all accounts, I'd read this online. It's not verified. Reading something that Michael Howarth had put on Facebook, he has information that Scott ran a 1:41.7 at Jerez, which was comparable to his 1:39.8 in qualifying on the Aprilia back in May. So if that's the case...
Well, yeah, but we already knew. I mean, this is why they didn't test the World Superbikes with MotoGP bikes this year, because it was a bit embarrassing when Johnny Ray trumped all the MotoGP bikes at the last Jerez test. Jerez is kind of, you know, is big enough, but it's not too big where the MotoGP bikes can kind of eke out their advantage.
No, they can't. I agree.
Yeah, you get Johnny Ray on a quali tire. You know, he's able to put in those top times. But, you know, I think even Johnny Ray was kind of like high 1:38s. So, yeah, with a bike, if you take everything into consideration, I still think that was a pretty impressive performance. I think, you know, we've spoken about this before, these types of riders coming into BSB. I think, you know, for Scott to be competitive, we can definitely point to the tracks where we know he's going to go well.
Sure.
You know, the Donington Parks, the Silverstones, Assen, Brands Hatch. You know, it's the question for him for his 2019 season is, you know, when he comes to the more sort of Cadwell Parks, Alton, you know, the niggly stuff that, you know, he and those type of riders are not used to, can he still turn in enough of a result to, you know, to not get hurt?
That seems the big question for next season, one of two. Question one, can they get the bike working early enough? Whereas when the original Panigale came out, it took PBM a while and Shane Byrne a while to get the Motec working with the Ducati and vice versa. Scott has Giovanni Crupi as his crew chief, who was Shane Byrne's crew chief last season, obviously until his unfortunate accident, and the season before. And Josh Brooks has brought Stuart Winton across with him, who is his long-term chief mechanic. So The guys, they have the right guys in the team for them, that's for sure. But one thing that, that Scott's got to get used to is the Pirellis, which aren't... they're not Bridgestones or Michelins. And I know that sounds really obvious, but they aren't anywhere near the level that the MotoGP tyres are at, both in carcass, in feedback, and overall design.
Yeah, I have a feeling too. The other thing is him learning to manage the tyre wear, presumably on the Pirellis, getting used to that.
They are quite unique in the sense they do have a bit of a drop-off, don't they?
Yeah, and I think we have seen that during this year. You know, there were definitely bikes and riders who were able to manage, especially that rear, just, you know, keep nursing it, just keeping the grip there. Because I think we've, you know, definitely seen a few people's challenges wilt on those last sort of four or five laps before the end, where unfortunately they've just nothing left in that rear.
Yeah, you start losing 0.2, 0.3 a lap, it soon makes a difference, doesn't it?
It's too competitive right now, isn't it? You know, 2.2, 0.3, you know, that's sort of second to fifth to seventh to ninth.
That's right. I know every tyre has a shelf life, and it, even the MotoGP tyre does drop off. But in terms of feedback and of grip, the Pirellis aren't on that same level, certainly as the Michelins at the moment and the Bridgestone front that Scott's also run previously.
Out of the gate, how do you see Scott and Josh, you know, competitive against each other? Would you sort of like, you reckon Josh will probably have the early lead?
Yes, just for his familiarity. It's a V4, it's not a twin. He doesn't have to ride it, to change his riding style overly to compensate the twin, although he had ridden the Yamaha for two seasons on the cross-plane crank that had sort of twin tendencies, didn't it? I think Josh is very particular about his setup. It's how quickly he can get that bike into the window. The track knowledge is no issue. That's one thing he'll have over Scott for the time being.
And do you think he'll help Scott with that? Do you think he'll give him some pointers on some of these smaller tracks? Or do you think it's just every man for himself?
I can't see a repeat of the brotherly love of the Irwins from last year with Scott and Brooksy.
I don't think you're going to get Josh coming past Scott just tapping his tail. So it's like, follow me, lad. You know, I'll show you a couple of laps.
I can't see it. But also, Scott is a MotoGP rider. Scott was runner-up in the Moto2 championship. You know, he was the youngest ever Grand Prix race winner in 2009. So
I always wonder how Scott would have gone if he hadn't gone onto the Honda as he moved up into MotoGP.
That's also a very good point, because that wasn't the greatest of motorcycles to learn his trade on. I often wonder how well Scott would have gone if he hadn't grown that extra foot as well.
He is one of the taller ones.
He really is. But I think that'll suit him more in BSB. The average height of the rider in BSB is, I would say, a good 2 or 3 inches more than in MotoGP. So the deficit isn't going to be too great. They're quite stocky riders in BSB, I would say. I wouldn't have thought he would be too far over the average weight of a BSB rider either, because he's quite lean.
He's very lean, yeah. And then, but you look at Hickman as well.
Exactly,
pretty tall,
yeah,
pretty strong as well. And he's, you know, he's gone wild. I don't think it's been any disadvantage.
No, I
to
agree.
Him.
Glenn Irwin's touching. I'm sure Glenn's touching 6 foot as well. So Luke Mossy's 6 foot. It was only the likes of Leon Haslam, the little pocket rocket for a reason, who are the sort of the less vertical members of the grid.
Oh, hang on, just a quick side note. Did you get Jen one of those calendars for Christmas?
An advent calendar?
Well, no, there's some calendar.
Oh, no.
With all the boys all stripped off.
Oh, my good.
Did I read rightly that Matt Roberts is in there somewhere too?
I think the last one is hilarious. I don't know if it was a Photoshop of one, but I saw a photo earlier on of one of Stuart Higgs. Was Mr. December. And it was a Photoshop onto the body with the I assuming isn't actually Stuart's, but it was black and white, and it was very tastefully done. But now, unless it's John Hopkins or Dean Harrison, I don't think she'd be really interested.
Doesn't she like her Leons?
I'm not even going down that road.
Oh, okay.
Because because he is the good Lord Cameo is Jen's ultimate, and I'm not even talking about that. Morawaki bollocks. Move on.
Moving along. Okay, so that's BYZ Ducati. Shall we move on to RAF Karasaki, the old...
Jake Dixon.
Jake Dixon team.
Yeah, Jake Dixon's old team.
Well, he's off to Moto 2. Well, Moto Triumph now.
Yeah, he's on the Moto Triumph and going very well by all accounts in the recent test.
That's a good looking bike as well. But again, I don't want to get too...
We're not going to steal the thunder for the guys who are going to do this.
We'll end up wrapping everything up.
And it's like, okay guys, Merry Christmas, we're done. They signed young Ryan Vickers, the Stock 600 champion from last season. Really exciting young talent, very well thought of by Yamaha and mentored by Alan Carter, who at the time was the youngest GP winner when he won the French Grand Prix in 1984 for Marlboro Yamaha. His dad was a big sponsor in the UK, Mal Carter. If you look at old pictures of Ron Haslam, he was backed by Faro, which was Mal Carter. And also Alan's brother, Kenny Carter, was a world-level speedway rider as well, multiple British champion. Alan is looking after Ryan Vickers at the moment and doing a fantastic job. The kid's got an awful lot of talent. Whether it will transfer going straight from Stock 6 to Superbike, I don't know. It depends how much testing they give him. I think personally I would have liked to have seen him do another season on either a Supersport bike as Jake did. Jake went into Supersport. He was with McAdams, Appleyard McAdam, and he was with Smith's Triumph as well. So at least he had a little bit more experience of the tracks before going into the Superbike team with Lee Hardy. So I don't know how that's going to pan out. I don't know which way that's going to go for Ryan and for Lee, but I wish them both the best of luck. That's going to be a really interesting little pairing to keep an eye on, because there's an awful lot of talent there, and Lee is very good at nurturing young talent.
Yeah, agreed. I would have liked to have seen Ryan go into a team with a sort of senior, more seasoned teammate.
Yeah.
Who could have just sort of helped him with the bike, with maybe any kind of setup directions and stuff. I think sometimes when you're a single rider in a team, especially new like that on a completely different size bike, it's possible, I think, to get a little bit lost.
Yeah. And vital in testing as well. If you're going out like, as we'll come to with the Quattro Plant boys out in Guadix, it's great to have a teammate to be able to follow, especially as a rookie to the class.
And data to study.
Yeah, because it's going to be an open data. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just unfortunate that there's just the one bike at the RAF regular and reserves Kawasaki for next season. Now, whether they'll run a Superstock bike or not, I don't know. It's not looking likely at the moment. But let's see what comes nearer the time. There may be changes ahead. That somebody might change their mind. I don't know. But yeah. It's going to be a baptism of fire for Ryan Vickers, I think, but he certainly has a great network around him.
So you touched on the Quattro Plant JD Speedfit Kawasaki. That was Haslam's old team. So Glenn Irwin has arrived there from the BYZ Ducati, and he's teamed with Ben Curry.
Yeah, Ben Curry stepping up into the British Superbike class from the Gearlink Kawasaki British Super Sport Squad. He's my dark horse for Rookie of the Year on that, I think. But there are an awful lot of rookies coming into BSB next season. It'll certainly be a closely contested title to have. Whether you can call other riders rookies if they've already ridden a superbike race, I don't know. I'm not doing disservice to other riders that will be mentioned in shortly. But Ben, he fared quite well in the test, from what I'm led to believe. He wasn't too far off Glenn with his times. And they both seemed thoroughly pleased with the outing before Christmas.
No, it was glad that they got some testing. Like we were talking to, you know, having someone like Glenn who can help him with that. And with Ben having already ridden the Kawasaki from last year as well, there's a certain degree of familiarity there. as well. So there's not too much changing for him. So hopefully, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, this for me in 2019 is sort of one more interesting years because a lot of the sort of familiar faces, brand names have moved on to different places. And there is, it's hard to sort of remember, like an intake of, you know, fresh faces and new names for a while. I'm really, really excited to get next year started.
100%. Exactly the reason why next season is looking so good. It has the potential to be really spectacular. If the guys on the new bikes can gel with them really quickly, there is a testing ban for BSB in January and February before they go out to Spain in early March. I'm sure they're going to Montblanco and Portimao, I'm sure Ollie said. And then they do have individual test days in the UK throughout the year. But the two official BSB test days are at Montblanco and Portimao. So they're going to have to get an awful lot of time into these new bikes for the guys that have changed seats, especially, so as not to let the guys who haven't changed seats get too comfortable before they start to bring the times down to where they need to be.
Well, let's go on to talk about OMG Racing Suzuki. So Luke Mossi from the Kawasaki team is there now.
Yes.
And he was going to be paired with Gino Ri. Gino Ri.
He was.
I always struggle with that name because there's Rees and Rays and Gino Ri.
Gino is a Ri. Yes.
Yeah, so Luke Mossi and Gino Ri. So I saw that Gino Ri had got signed.
He did.
And then 2 days? A week, was it?
It was about a week.
Later, he was unsigned. And now it's Josh Elliott. And Josh, who did get a run this year on the Superbike as well, has been confirmed for a full-time ride for next year. That's exciting.
It's a fantastic opportunity and particularly exciting. Yeah, and from a personal level, really looking forward to seeing what Josh can do over a full season. Gino was originally Luke Mossi's partner. As you say, Luke coming across from JG Speedfit, Gino signing for a second year with the team. Unfortunately, though, there was some contract issue. There was a what was the phrase that they used? A conflict of interest. That was it. So there's a story behind it that may or may not come out in the future. It's a difficult one for the team and for Gino. I think any team in the same situation would have acted the same way. There was no leverage from the Elliots to make it happen. It was purely between the team and Gino. Josh was considering the super stock ride again for next season and was happy with that and what the team had offered him there. So for what came after was nothing to do with Luke, nothing to do with Josh. It was purely between Gino and the team. And unfortunately, it became a termination of the contract, which has since left Gino without a ride. And as we're going through with the teams today, there aren't an awful lot of rides left for the likable ex-Moto2 rider.
Well, especially at that level, because I think OMG had really started to prove themselves through this year that they were going to be a fairly competitive, serious team. And I think, you know, Luke probably had a little bit of a question mark over him for some of his races, but you know, toward the end of the season, you know, he started to get back his confidence and he started to show some of that form that we'd seen earlier on as well. And I think, you know, Josh has the potential to be a real talent as he builds his confidence and his knowledge as well with the Superbike.
It's that they've been a busy team since the end of the season. They contested the race of the year at Mallory Park at the middle of or towards the end of October. And an annual race, Bill Bass were there. There was, I think, Gearlink were there. There was a couple of little teams that took part. It's still essentially a club race, but it's an open race, so anybody can enter. Brad Ray took his BSB bike there. There's always one or two teams at the end of the year that end up doing the race of the year at Mallory Park. Bearing in mind, it's a 40-second lap at Mallory Park. It's not really a superbike track anymore, even though BSB used to go there up until about 6 or 7 years ago, maybe a little bit more. So it's a very well-known traditional circuit in the UK. They've tried to throw extra corners in at it, but it's essentially one loop round the lake, couple of corners, bus stop, panhandle, back through the little... a panhandle hairpin, up through the bus stop, which is a super tight left-right-left chicane, and called the bus stop because the bike, you literally are at walking pace about as they go through the apex of the corner, to slow the bikes down onto Devil's Elbow back onto the start finish straight, which is off camber. So an awful lot of serious accidents have happened down Devil's Elbow at Mallory Park over the years because the bikes lose traction, some get a little bit of a little bit fruity with the right hand, and it's very easy for the bikes to break traction. So an awful lot of horsepower, an awful lot of action around there. But Luke was pretty good. He made a great showing, considering they didn't really, all they did basically was sit him on the bike, adjust the pegs and the bars to make him comfortable, and then sent him out. And he ended up, I think he was only he went faster than he ever did on the Kawasaki, and was only 0.2 off Brad Ray in the final race. So suffice to say, he likes the Suzuki. And then they've just spent 3 days out at Cartagena as an end of season thank you to the team, the photographer, to the Alex, the PR guy. They've taken the whole team out to Cartagena for 3 days. Still a serious test. Still there were other bikes on track. Is there a permanent almost track day place there, or a bike hire place at Cartagena?
Yeah, it's possible. I'm not sure if you're thinking of Almeria, but Cartagena is still a decent track for superbikes.
Yeah.
You know, they're good. It's not like the real teeny Mickey Mouse.
No,
ones,
it's as close to a BSB circuit as you're going to find there almost.
It's a good circuit. It's a good ride. But you're right. I mean, given its location, it's pretty, like Almeria, you know, almost like a desert out there. So, you know, a majority of dry days. So it's a very popular track day place to go. So yeah, I'm sure they were probably having to scare some of the
apparently yeah they were mixing it. People. But what was the really cool thing? They actually let the mechanics ride the bikes at the end of the final day as a thank you. That's pretty cool to do.
Actually, that is pretty good. But you know, equally too, it's like they know they're not going to crash them because the poor buses have to put them back together again.
Exactly. You bend it, you mend it, and you can.
Yeah, exactly. Literally, you're mending it. No, you are mending it. You're the mechanic.
The guys went well. Luke was very close to his lap record time, and Josh was very well onto his coattails. So, OMG Racing are going into the winter very happy with their two riders. But again, as we said before, it's just a shame for Gino now, who is out on a limb a little bit.
Potentially, you know, he has some other interests, but it was a shame too because I, you know, when he joined OMG, I kind of saw that as a sort of a 2-year project. And, you know, this 2019 potentially was going to be that second year. So, you know, I think there was some real promise there. But I'm also, you know, very excited about the two riders they have got. So I have a feeling, you know, they're just going to kind of start from how they finished and just build from there.
I would agree. Yeah. We'll be doing quite a bit with OMG next season. So we should be reporting back on a regular basis. And it's nice to, for me on a personal level, to be doing after 5 years of doing Josh's race reports, to finally start doing British Superbike race reports for him. I couldn't be happier for Josh and his dad, Jules, for the efforts they both put in. On a personal level from, you know, my side of things.
So let's talk about Honda Racing. So we talked about Glenn Irwin, but the other Irwin brother, Andrew, is going to Honda. And actually, they've replaced both their riders. I mean, for a long time, it was the O'Halloran and Linfoot show. But 2019 is going to be Andrew Irwin and Javier Forres from World Superbike.
Was he on the Barney Ducati?
Yeah, that's right.
Super talent. There's Jordi Torres.
Yeah, he's the MV rider, who I think has just been confirmed that he will have a ride back in World Superbikes on the Pichetti.
Yes, did that come out today? Did I see that? Yeah, Motopod with the breaking news.
Because there was still like a handful of these sort of World Superbike exiles floating around. I mean, you know, we'll touch on that at some point, that some of them were rumoured to be coming to British Superbikes. Javier Forres, clearly one of them for Honda. But a few others that we thought might be coming don't seem to have been able to put a deal together.
No, Loris Baz was one of them.
That's right. Yeah, he's one of the ones I was thinking of as well. So I haven't heard of what his future holds.
From what I can gather, he's still trying to forge a living in the World Superbike paddock. Because unless there's a team coming in that we don't know about for next season to British Superbikes that will be able to give him the level of competition that he, level of machinery to challenge where he needs to be challenging, there aren't the rides left for him now. You know, as we'll come to a little bit later on, one of the teams that he was rumoured to be riding for, they've announced two riders, so there's no spaces there. But yeah, it's good that Honda have finally shaken things up a little bit. Things can get stale over, you know, 3-4 seasons. The guys can only give the feedback so much on the bike when it's essentially the same bike.
Well, this is the other thing, exciting news for Honda for next year, is the fact that Honda Factory have stepped in at the World Superbike level with a huge shake-up.
Yeah, they have.
For the World Superbike team. Unfortunately, rather rudely leaving Tenkata.
Dreadful.
In
that
the lurch.
Was really bad.
But yeah, Murawaki now stepping up to take over the organization of the Honda Racing Team and a lot more involvement. And, you know, logically, that development parts and other information can only filter down and help.
I would like to think so, but touching on the Tenkata thing, what a dreadful thing to happen at such a late stage in the year. There's some seriously good mechanics out there, both Dutch and one or two of the British guys that I know out there, who now don't have a job for next year, which is invariably too late to find
something. Yeah, it was a real shame because we never really had Honda step forward and explain their side of the reasoning, because, you know, they're not just running a team, they're also sort of, you know, potentially running the logistics and the hospitality. And there was some sense like why they weren't able to keep that, but they've dumped them wholesale. And I think it was frustrating for Tenkata team too, because I think they had some of the big wigs, big cheeses out there literally a few days or a week before this bombshell. And at that point, it was all hunky-dory. Everything was going to go ahead from what I had read and understood. So they really, really were caught blindsided by this change of direction with, completely wrong-footed, with nothing as a second option or nothing prepared.
Could we say hunky-midori? Would that work? Everything was hunky-midori before it all went to Morawaki.
It all went, whatever the Japanese tits up is.
So anyway, Andrew Irwin. So he had a pretty decent season last year with the PBM Ducati squad. And even when he stopped following his brother around, he was putting in some reasonable lap times and some really good performances for a rookie on tracks that he didn't really know. So I think the Honda...
Lungs, apart from the ones where he missed his braking points.
Yeah, missing the braking point at Snetterton was one of his low points of the season.
I guess it's just like everybody does it at some point, so it's just best to kind of get it over and done with early and then just move on. But you're right. Later on, I mean, he really kind of stepped up. You started to see him race, get his elbows out and really sort of get into the mix, as well as finding the pace as well.
As long as the Honda doesn't bite him as it has done a few other riders this last year, hopefully they can fix whatever issues they have with that, and it can be a little more of an agreeable bike to ride, let's say, because as we've said previously across the year, nearly every rider that's ridden it this year has been bitten by it in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, I mean, I think unfortunately that was O'Halloran and Linford. I mean, they were just off it more than they were on it in some respects, and you know, unfortunately, the coming off it was hurting.
Was, and that was the issue
was causing. I mean, both of them got pretty much beaten up trying to ride that bike quickly.
Not an easy bike to ride, and that's no disrespect to Honda. That's just the nature of the bike, and you know, the results speak for themselves.
Well, and also, you know, this goes back again, as we keep saying, how competitive BSB is, and you just, you know, have to take these things by the scruff of the neck and actually, you know, wring them with an inch of life. And if the bike isn't doing it, the rider's having to try and do it themselves. And I think, you know, we've seen a few cases of that bike being probably overridden. You know, starting off with some good pace, but rider just not having perhaps the ability to keep that up, that level of effort. You know, either the tires go off or the rider just gets exhausted or is ultimately thrown
off. And it showed
off
the year before with Linfort that it was a competitive bike when things went right, or the weather had to be a little bit inclement, but the bike, you know, Linfort could make it work, and so could Jason on his day. Now, Jason's been with Honda for a number of years, and he had the opportunity to move some time back, but he stayed stayed patient with Honda, and he stayed loyal. And they eventually rewarded him with the Superbike ride after doing his Superstock season to challenge Danny Buchan. So it was good that that Honda gave Jason what he wanted, but I think a new challenge for Jason and a new challenge for Dan Linfort as well, I think, will really throw fire into their bellies, because both of them, I think both the riders and the manufacturer I think, had run their course. I think if it had gone on for another season, I don't think it would have ended particularly well for any of them. So the time had come for me. For me, in my opinion, anyway, for what it's worth, I think the timing was right for a lot of the rider changes that have gone on. It's been much of a muchness over the last few seasons with rider changes. It's great to see guys that are actually taking a step out of their comfort zone, moving from a manufacturer that they're very comfortable with, and moving on to another manufacturer with a completely different motorcycle, in the case of Jason O'Halloran. But as far as Honda go, with Andy Irwin, they've got a young and hungry rider there. They've got the experience of Xavi Forres coming through from World Superbikes, who has experience of the Pirellis. The only thing he's got to get used to is the Motec electronics. He's ridden IDM before. I think he was the IDM champion 1 year. So he's used to nadgery little tracks that aren't really World Superbike standard. When you look at the influx of overseas riders that have come into BSB over the last couple of years, they've been fairly well maligned for the efforts that they've put in and the results they haven't had. They haven't done a John Hopkins, they haven't done a Gregorio Lavia. You know, when you look at Davide Giuliano coming in, and you see what Sylvain Gintoli didn't do, and Jakob Smerts didn't really reach his potential, and Sylvain Barrier last year as well. So there's quite a few.
It's always struck me with some of those riders, I mean, I don't want to sort of be harsh or unfair, but some of them felt they came to British Superbikes as like a holding pattern to go back to World Superbikes or something else.
Oh, you're not telling me that Scott Redding's come in to see out his career at BSB?
No. Not, I mean, I think in he's the opposite. I think he just wants to get back to riding a bike with actual bikes behind him instead of all the bikes in front of him. But, you know, some of the other riders that you mentioned, it just feels that, there's this sense that they come back to British Superbikes, they kind of do a year, they try and stay out of trouble, try not to get injured, in the hope of then sort of going back into World Superbikes. It works for some, it doesn't work for others. But I guess maybe as that sort of armchair tucked up on a couch with my feet up drinking the beer, you know, commentator, sometimes I just look at a few of the riders and I sort of question their full commitment to a British Superbike season compared to, you know, some of the other...
Yeah, that was hugely obvious with Sylvain Gintoli. If you put him on a circuit that has trees around it, he didn't like it.
And I can completely understand and respect that, but I think that's sometimes why these kind of riders have had a bit of a hard time. Scott, I think, will be 100% committed. It'll be interesting to measure his progress against that of Javier Forrest and some... I'm just trying to see it. Do we have any other World Superbike riders coming in?
No, not at the moment. Not at the moment.
Well, you're talking about...
No, Karen.
I was going to say, you're talking about Jason O'Halloran, the ex-Honda rider. He is now gone to Yamaha,
he has,
right?
He takes Josh Brooks' seat there.
So he's with Taran.
Exactly that.
Okay. Well, and actually I have to say, one of the highlights for me for this year was seeing Taran on the podium. Silverstone? Yeah, the National circuit. So, you know, that was probably one of my highlight races and one of the few different names to grace the podium, to be honest. In some respects this year. But yeah, I'm really, really curious to see how Jason goes. I've always rated him as a fast rider, somewhat held back, I think, by the Honda bike. So yeah, seeing him on what has been proven to be a fairly competitive bike for next year, I think, yeah, it could be really exciting. Could sort of reinvigorate him as well, as long as he can stay
healthy. That's exactly what I'm expecting for Jason for next year, to be reinvigorated, to relight the fire in his belly and give him the propulsion that he needs to be challenging for podiums week in and week out, to mount a serious challenge on the British Superbike Championship. However, he's going to have his work cut out with his teammate, you know. I have a sneaky feeling that Taran is going to be, in the early stages, in the opening couple of rounds, I think Taran's going to be the man to beat.
Well, it could well be true, because, I mean, he was, towards the end of this year, was definitely getting the better off Josh Brooks on a pretty regular basis, not just in qualifying, but in the racing
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. I mean, he took four podiums of six races towards the end of the season, which, you know, that's the consistency that he's going to need next season to really give him the push up into the showdown. I think the showdown will be equally as if not even more hotly contested. No, I can't speak English.
It's just you.
It is. I had my middle-aged MOT last week, but thankfully everything was okay. But it didn't involve rubber gloves and bending over just yet. I'm quite happy with that. It was down to just blood sugar and...
You just had your nuts.
Yeah, exactly, right? That. Just a little bit of WD-40, a little bit of flexing, and we're okay. Yeah, I think Taron's going to be a real contender for the British Superbike Championship next season. I don't think he's just going to be a showdown contender. I think he's going to be an actual championship contender. The showdown will be, I think that'll be verging on brutal for the guys by the time we get to Cadwell Park and we're looking at showdown positions more keenly as we get through into August next year. So I think that's another part of BSB that really does excite me an awful lot. Somebody else that could be hot on his tail for a British Superbike contention is Bradley Ray. In fact, yeah, most of the top 10, if not the top 12, will be battling for a showdown position. And potentially five or six of those are in with a genuine shout of the championship. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would, because, you know, I think going into this year, I think Haslam was a clear favourite.
Haslam and Shaky were certainly, yeah.
You know, with the last two, you know, the 2 years that he'd had, all the groundwork he'd done, he was sort of unlucky not to take it in 2017. But I think 2018 was very much his year. You know, Shaky maybe, but with then Shaky out early in the season, I think he was the clear favourite. So I think no matter how you thought the showdown was going to stack up, you knew realistically with that team behind him that he was in with a pretty strong shout of taking the title. When you look at the 2019 grid and the mix of riders and the fact that you got these new bikes in there as well, it's really hard to point to anybody, you know, even like certain for the showdown, yeah, to be honest, as well. Because, you know, the other great thing that Haslam had for him this year was his just metronomic consistency.
Fabulous.
You know, and this is the other thing too. A lot of the other riders that we sort of tip for the top, they've definitely shown the pace. But, you know, you look back at the 2018, you know, the consistency wasn't there. And I think, you know, this is what we're going to have to see for 2019 is who can come out, you know, with the pace and the results early on and keep that going.
Agreed.
For the season as a whole, because I think it's consistency really that's going to get it, that's going to win.
Which is exactly what Bradley Ray did last year, but then fell off a cliff after Brands Indy, and until we got to Cadwell Park, and only Cadwell Park, did he actually reappear on a podium again.
So hang on, so Bradley is back with Build Base Suzuki.
Yes.
Have they announced a teammate for Bradley?
No. Not yet.
Do we know who or suspect who might be in the running?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a fairly long queue of people, because it's the only... if they're still factory-supported next season, it's the only factory-supported ride left in BSB.
Maybe I should check on eBay. Maybe it's still up for auction.
It maybe is.
What's it up to now?
I remember chatting to Billy McConnell at Cadwell. He said he had it in his contract that if he finished top two in the championship, he would get the Superbike ride. Whether that carries through or if he looks to other teams for his endeavours next season remains to be seen. Obviously, Richard Cooper won the final race of the year at Brands Hatch at the end of the British Superbike season, so he is in the frame for it. Whether you have people like Luke Stapleford, whether Gino Rea, you know, guys that haven't quite got next year squared away yet, who would maybe come into it? There's an author. I think there's quite a long list of people that would have an eye on the Build Base Suzuki ride. But at the moment, there's only Bradley Ray that's been confirmed.
Okay, yeah, it'd be interesting to see who does get that slot, because, like you say, I mean, realistically, that probably is the last and only competitive seat still undecided.
Yeah, it is. So interesting to see. Hopefully, if Bradley starts the season the same as he did last year, obviously there was the difference between the 2017 Pirellis that the teams were still using and the 2018 Pirellis that they were using. It sort of not skewed results a little bit, but the teams took advantage of what they had. But they couldn't quite replicate that through the rest of the season. So interesting to see how Bill Bay, Suzuki and Bradley Ray will get on with that. Hopefully he'll be able to return the same kind of consistency that he started the season with. But we shall wait to be seen on that one. Surprise package of the end of 2018 certainly was Tommy Bridwell on his Moto Rapido Ducati. He really took no prisoners in his surge for the 2018 Riders' Cup, basically the best of the rest trophy for finishing seventh, who was the next rider out of the showdown. So he has re-signed with Moto Rapido Ducati, who next year will have a title sponsor at last in Oxford Products, and they are Oxford Racing Ducati. So good news for Steve Moore, the team owner there, to get a title sponsor with the team at last, rather than ploughing all his own hard-earned into it, plus the other sponsors that help him out so well. And good for Tommy Bridwell, who gelled with the team so well last season. He will be a showdown contender. I think if he carries on the form that he had at the end of last season into next season, there's no doubt he'll be a showdown contender.
I agree. I mean, it was really something to see him jump on that bike and just, like you say, instantly gel with that. I mean, you think if he had been able to do the whole season on that, without a doubt, he would have been in the
yeah,
showdown.
Yeah, he would.
So it's great to see because, like you say, you know, it's a great team. I was wondering too if they weren't with the new sponsors going to run a second bike as well. I think there was some sort of like rumors, but semi-serious, that Shaky was like, you know, saying, oh, you know, if you, would you put out a second bike? And I think Wolf was like, if you come, I'll find a second bike for you. Don't worry.
I'm still of the opinion that a lot of that was, today is the day I lose my British Superbike title. So therefore, let's make it about me for a little bit longer. In the nicest possible way, you know.
But I haven't heard anything more that's been formalised into anything
else. There's nothing else more, and I still stand by my original thoughts that we won't see Shane Byrne next season other than stood next to Matt Roberts.
But he himself, as far as I know, hasn't come forward with an official statement saying that he is retiring or stepping back.
Not yet.
I guess he's still probably waiting to see how his rehab is going.
He had a scan at the I think it was the 6th of November. He had the scan that he was waiting for. By all accounts, things hadn't gone quite as well as he had hoped. And I believe there's another one in the early new year, and then we'll find out pretty much what's going to go on after that.
Yeah, I think.
But I'm still convinced that he'll only be on the TV on a sofa next season.
I agree. And I have to say, I thought he was a pretty good commentator, talking head. Like I said, I do like having riders there alongside the commentators, because the insight, especially for someone who's literally just stepped off the bike, I thought was fascinating.
100% agreed. 100% agreed. Quick rattle through some of the smaller teams in BSB. PR Racing BMW, they're going to run Joe Francis again. Joe jumped on the bike at Alton Park, the second Alton Park round last year. He will campaign that for a full season. So whether we can class you Josh Elliott, you Joe Francis, guys like that, whether we can class them as rookies for next season, because they've already raced in BSB, and Josh had raced the Tyco BMW the previous season at Snetterton and Assen. So do we call them rookies when you look at them against Ryan Vickers and Ben Curry?
I don't think one or two races is really going to teach you much. I tend to think a rookie is a rookie season.
Yeah, it's a rookie season, certainly.
So, you know, when I'm talking, in my mind, when I think about, you know, rookies, it's people who are sort of taking on a whole season for the first time.
I'm just being hard on the guys.
If you look at the variety in tracks, you know, trying to drag a superbike around some of these tracks, any rate of knots. You go ride Donington or Silverstone or something. I mean, that teaches you nothing.
You know, I'm just being hard on the guys because I can. But yeah, the rookies, if any time they needed a full and true rookies cup, next year is the year to have it in as an inaugural, if they don't already. I can't think that we do. It's just a notional idea. I can't remember off the top of my head. But with the guys coming in, then yeah, absolutely. Danny Buchan remains at FS3.
Danny Buchan strikes me as one of those people who could be a bit of a showdown spoiler.
I'd like to think maybe. So. He had a pretty decent consistency up until Cadwell and then kind of fell off the cliff a little bit. So he needs to keep that consistency all season to be able to be in that running, because he was up to Cadwell. I think it was him and Hickey and Taron McKenzie and Tommy Bridewell just started licking his lips around that sort of time. So, yeah, his consistency, once he started trying, I think, a little bit too hard, he just needs to rein it in a little bit next season and just, you know, keep it's consistency. That word is going to come up so many times next season. You guys listening in are going to be bored of hearing it. But that is any championship in motorcycle racing. Consistency is key. And that is going to be no more so than in BSB next season. Leon Haslam showed it this year. Jake Dixon showed it this year, and the guys that were making it into the showdown weren't quite as consistent as they should be. Peter Hickman and guys, you know, the guys that lost out, the guys that went in, consistency will be key.
So tag racing, the Yamaha riders will be Dan Linford and Sean Winter.
Certainly, the departing James Ellison, who we'll come on to next for the next team we have a little chat about. Dan's taken James Ellison's ride at Tag Yamaha alongside Sean Winfield, who gets a chance again, whose results last season and his lap times really did improve across the season. So good for Sean to get another crack at it as well. And Dan Linford, hopefully a change will be as good as a rest, and his injuries sustained across the season will have healed sufficiently well, and in the same vein as Jason O'Halloran, that he can come back invigorated with a fire in his belly. And I think he'll be keen to show just what he can do.
And I think the other sort of two sort of brand name teams that we haven't touched at yet are the Smiths BMW, who this year ran Peter Hickman, but next year we'll be running Peter Hickman and James Ellison. Peter Hickman, pretty high right now after his win at Macau GP.
Yeah, great season on the roads for Hickey. And also, you know, backing up his senior TT win, and did he win the Superstock race as well? It's hard when you just go from memory rather than just making notes on all of these things.
Did you happen to see, I think they, not only the Macau GP race, but they posted also a lap, I think, or maybe it was like the race for, on board Hickey's bike.
Oh, I've not seen that.
Sat and watched that, but I must admit, after about sort of 3 or 4 minutes, like hand in my mouth, you know, oh my God.
Have you watched the TT lap?
Well, no, I've seen the TT lap. I don't know. I mean, it's insane, but this was just, when you look, see Macau and you just see those kind of rock hard, like, towering concrete walls,
yeah.
And that it's unrelenting. You know, there's kind of gaps in the fences, at least around the TT circuit. You know, around Macau, there is nothing. There is no space. There is,
for closeness, Macau, nothing comes close to Macau, I think, for the closeness of the road furniture. But for the for outright brutal speed, that's the TT.
Yeah, with the bike moving and dancing around.
And you listen to it, and you can hear it breaking. You can hear it spinning up. You can hear the drive, and the commentary from Pete is fantastic on that. So guys, if you're out there, have a look on YouTube. Andrew, could you put a link into the show notes for me?
Will do, yeah.
To both of those, both to the Macau lap and to Hickey's final lap of the senior, 135.4. It was a quick one, and they were back markers on the way. It's a real fascinating insight. Sort of, it's worth kind of 17... whatever minutes of your time, that is a fact. James Ellison as
he's back.
As Peter Hickman, he hasn't been anywhere.
he didn't go,
he's still here.
Was it because we didn't give him a good enough send off?
He didn't give himself a good enough send off. That's the bottom line. I don't think we joined in the pomp and circumstance at Brands Hatch. Everything kind of went with a little bit of a whimper. But what James has done in the interim since Brands Hatch, in the last sort of week or so, he's actually broken the news that he was quite poorly for the closing stages of the British Superbike season. He had an issue with his back that even at Assen, he had to call one of the mechanics to his motorhome to help him put his socks on. He had such an issue with his back that he aggravated it in a crash at the final round. He said he drove home that night and was in agony by the time he got home. Went to see his chiropractor, who immediately referred him to his neurosurgeon, who immediately referred him to hospital and had an operation that night, because part of a disc in his back was protruding that was blocking his nerve. So he had no feeling from the top of his bum down to his heel on his left leg. The hospital said to him, look, if we don't operate this, you're going to lose control of your bladder and bodily functions. So we need to get this sorted now. It was that serious.
It's definitely one of those things, isn't it? As a guy, you know, they can talk about, you know, you'll be in unmitigating pain for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, I'm all right.
You know, but as soon as they talk about things, you know, below a certain midriff not working properly.
Below a certain latitude.
Get that sorted. I want that sorted out right now. And there's a lot I can live with, but...
Yeah, it's right. There's a lot I can live with. But once you get south of the equator, we need to talk.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm glad he got that diagnosed, and I'm glad he got that sorted.
Absolutely. No, not comfortable and not nice at all for James Ellison. So he is going to be pretty much commuting between Texas and the BSB circuits next year on the Smith's BMW, who will be getting the new BMW S1000RR, as will Tyco BMW. When those bikes arrive, I don't know. I don't think they're quite ready yet. So hopefully they'll be ready in time for testing come March. Ready for the guys to get him into the workshops and get them built. So good for James Ellison.
Both those teams could be potentially, you know, seriously competitive, because again, we've got BMW stepping up as a factory effort at World Superbikes.
Yeah.
You know, the BMWs really did languish, unfortunately. We saw this in World Superbikes, but we saw this to a degree in British Superbikes. You know, team was sort of left really to their own devices to try and develop those bikes without a lot of help or support from the factory. But yeah, that's all changing. So yeah, again, you know, that's another manufacturer, a bike that could be turned into quite a potent weapon.
I agree.
To go up against the Kawasaki's and the Ducatis. And, you know, it's always great having top line riders, but there's nothing better than having, you know, top line competitive machinery.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you can have the best rider in the world, but if he's on a mediocre motorcycle, even their talent isn't going to be able to make it work. And I think that was a lot of the issue with Christian Iden last year and the year before. As we said with the Honda guys, there's quite a few riders in BSB having a tendency to override the bikes they're on to make up the difference, and unfortunately picking themselves out of the scenery. And when Christian crashed, he tended to crash in a big way, which was tough for him and for the Tyco BMW team. So hopefully he'll have a good run at it next year. He'll start the season fit. He had an operation on his collarbone soon after the season. So hopefully the break and the testing ban of January and February, all the guys that are injured, it'll give them great convalescence time, get them back in the gym, get fit, get healed, and everybody has a safe testing, and we can all start the season with as fit as a motorcycle racing field can be. One of the last big teams, Tyco BMW, they've retained the services of Christian Iden. And they've promoted Keith Farmer, the Stock 1000 champion of last season for Tyco BMW. They promoted Keith to their Superbike squad. So in a similar situation to OMG, who've taken Josh Elliott from Stock 1000 and promoted him, then Keith Farmer has had the same benefit from his team. As we said, Christian, if he can form that consistency, which is key, of course, then he will be a showdown contender without a doubt. Keith has had his chances previously in British Superbikes, both with Paul Bird and with PR Racing. Neither of them went particularly well for Keith. With Paul Bird, he was teammate to Shaky in his pomp, it's always going to be difficult for a rider to come in and make his mark at that time when they were running the Rapid Solicitors Kawasaki's. It's so much so that the stress and the strife of learning the superbike, of being competitive in BSB, and really the pressure of riding for Paul Bird and the standards that Paul demands of his riders. Keith, unfortunately, didn't see out the season. He was diagnosed ill sort of two-thirds of the way through the season, and Paul let him go after after Cadwell back in 2013. But Keith had a Herculean crash at Alton Park earlier that year. I've said it on the show before, still one of the biggest British superbike crashes I've ever seen, where the rider walks away. It was down Cascades at Alton Park. There was literally nothing left. The bike was obliterated. Keith got up and walked away. He was just battered and bruised and with a dented ego. But the bike, wow. There wasn't an awful lot that came back. I'll tell you what I'll try and do if I remember. I am heading off to meet Mark Woodage for tea in a couple of weeks' time. I saw him in Manchester on Saturday. He was heading off to a Star Wars, which was really cool. Just a side note, here we go on a digression again. He was going to see Star Wars at the GMEX or Manchester Arena, but it was Star Wars on the big screen, but with a live symphony orchestra playing the score.
So this is the original
Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
The one that we know to be the best. Yeah, that would have been fantastic. A John Williams score played by a full orchestra.
Absolutely,
like
it was exactly
that.
Yeah, that would have been such a wonderful thing to do. So we saw Brains in Manchester. So I managed to organise a bit of a chat with him. We're going out for a bite to eat. I'm going over to his little unit over near Sheffield. So I'll ask him about Keith and what exactly was salvaged from that ZX10 at the time, because Brains was his crew chief for that year. So that'll be an interesting question.
So I think that's pretty much it, isn't it? I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, couple of new teams coming in. EHA Racing, they were major competitors in Supersport last year with Ross Twyman, David Allingham, and later Alistair Seeley came in when Ross couldn't unfortunately raise the funds to continue the season, which is a shame because Ross is a cracking little rider. And David Allingham, he struggled with injury early part of the season, and then they changed bikes. They went from I think it was either a 15 or a 16 R6 to the 18 R6, and there's an awful lot of changes within the team, but they've decided to step up to British Superbike next season on another Yamaha R1, taking David Allingham up into the big class. And that'll be just a season of learning for the Northern Irish, another Northern Irishman. How many do we want? Is that five?
I don't know. It's something in the water, isn't it? For sure.
There's definitely something in the water over there. We have Glenn Irwin, Andy Irwin, Josh Elliott. Let's have a look. Keith Farmer and David Allingham. Yeah, five. So five Northern Irishmen in British Superbikes next season. Plenty of support from we Northern Iron in the British Superbike Championship. So good luck to David Allingham and the EHA Racing team. And finally, Raceways Yamaha, which is McCam's. Raceways race team run McCam's Yamaha. And last year they ran Matt Truelove in Stock 1000 in McCam's colours on an R1. And he gets the leg up into British Superbike this season as a satellite team almost to McCam's, but running under the Raceways Yamaha banner.
Like I say, I'm just super excited. Look at that field. It's like kind of looking at a menu and you're just waiting for dinner to start. So we'll have to kind of get Christmas over the way and kind of grimace through January and February. But yeah.
Yeah, January and February is going to be a little bit barren, isn't it?
Well, I'm just going to be even looking forward to the testing starting. Because I think already, we'll start to get a bit of a clue, of how the riders are gelling with the bikes, and yeah, like I said, I'm just looking forward to sort of getting going already.
Bring on the shenanigans!
So, do you still have some time? Because we've kind of gone through the BSB, but I would like to just talk about some of the support classes if you still got time.
Yeah, of course.
So one of the things I really wanted to talk about was GP2. So this is a new class for 2018. I think this was Stuart Higgs trying to help find a way to prop up a middleweight competitive series by allowing what were essentially Moto2 framed bikes, but with super stock engines, right? I mean, they were just straight 600s, no tuning allowed. So I guess the performance was in the frame.
Yeah.
It was not a series I was able to kind of really like follow, because the first thing was trying to get a sense of how many, because they were going to be running in the Supersport 600 class at the same time. So I was interested to know how many actually, stepped up to take that on, because
I think there were only five.
You know, I was trying to look at that thinking like, why would you do that? I'm sure, you know, these bikes are going to be way more expensive than running, a tricked out R6.
Very much so. Very much so.
And I was just trying to see, try and understand what the future for these were, because we know that Moto2 was finishing. So yes, okay, you could go out and buy Moto2, ex-Moto2 machinery. But, all the frame manufacturers, were going to stop logically making parts for these bikes. You wouldn't be able to get the engines. Yeah, so I wasn't quite sure quite how that was seen to sort of progress on through the years. I guess at the beginning of the year, we weren't quite sure what was going to happen, but I think we have seen that some of the manufacturers are recommitting to 600 class. I think obviously we saw, that it was the Yamaha essentially was one of the few bikes that got a bit of a makeover, and that seemed to be the 600 to be on. But it sounded like Kawasaki.
Yeah, there's a new Kawasaki ZX636 come out. Obviously the 636 engine isn't legal for British superbikes or for World Supersport for that matter. So some of the engines that are going around in British superbikes at the moment are of an age, shall we say.
Yeah.
However, when you look at Ben Curry and what he did against the onslaught of Yamahas last season, if you look, Ben Curry finished second in the championship to Jack Kennedy. And his teammate James Westmoreland finished third. So the two Gearlink Kawasakis finished second and third last season with a Yamaha ahead of them. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 Yamahas behind them.
Yeah.
I stand to be corrected on that, but I'm sure the majority of those guys, certainly, I'm sure Sam Wilford's on an R6. David Allingham certainly was. Bradley Jones certainly was. Alistair Seeley was. And Tom Oliver. And Ross Twyman and Bjorn Essman. So even those guys themselves were on Yamahas. So, to see those two 636, the two gear, it's not 636s, the two Gearlink Kawasakis up there, it proves there's still life in the old dog yet. And they've, the good news for Gearlink Kawasaki is that Ben Wilson is coming back riding for them next season after his long injury layoff after smashing his leg a couple of seasons ago. Hopefully they'll retain the services of James Westmoreland, who came good towards the end of the season and won the last race of the year at Brands Hatch. But as you say about the GP2, when you look at the GP2 championship, there were eight riders who contested the GP2 Cup last year, but only
this year
four of those riders did a full season.
Mm.
And even then, I think only three of them contested almost every round. But most races were won by Josh Owens on a Calex GP2. There were three. What the other point is, there were 1, 2, 3, 4 Dutchies that came through into the GP2 class. Kyle Ride, after he lost his ride with CF. He was with CF Motorsport, wasn't he? Craig Fitzpatrick. He lost his ride sort of halfway through the season. He came in, won a couple of, I think he's won 4 races and 3 second places, but then walked away from the team before the start of Alton Park. It hasn't got that substance yet that I think will come next season. There's quite a few guys moving up from Motostar that I think will run Moto2 machinery. Obviously, with the change to Triumph and the 675 in the GP class, that's opened out a whole market of Moto2 bikes. But while the market is, in for want of a better word, flooded with Moto2 bikes, that should effectively drive the price down. So you're not after, you're not chasing that that pot of gold in a Moto2 bike. Yeah, they are expensive. Yes, they do have benefits. They do have slicks. They do have the rigid frame. They do have added extras that the production bikes don't have. But they're still at the moment. Josh Owens, very, very talented racer, talented Liverpudlian lad, still doing his work Monday to Friday in an engineering shop. He was mixing it up with the British Supersport regulars most weekends. So he will be a threat next year. I'm sure he's running Moto2 again. And I think there are guys coming up, whether Ryan Saxelby will put a couple of bikes out for Jake Archer, maybe Jack Scott, one or two others of the guys that have been in MotoStar for this year. I would expect to see 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 for sure that will come up on Moto2 bikes. So hopefully if we could get into double figures for next year, it's almost a slow burner. Stuart Higgs has done exactly the right thing by opening the championship up to the Moto2 guys. It's given variation, it's given depth to the field. Because I still think next season, unless, you know, the bike that Josh Owens can ride, or if Kyle Ride gets a competitive bike for the season, as we saw with Alistair Seeley last year on the Spirit Moto2 bike, mixing it up with the guys at the front, if we can do that on a regular basis with more bikes, then there will eventually be a gradual shift across to them, I think. I can't see that there will be an end to the Super Sport category in that sense, not while Yamaha are making the R6s, Kawasaki are putting a basis out for a 600, and if Honda rejoin, that will continue verbatim because that is the essence of the class. But if we can bring in more of the Moto2 guys and mix it up, if their lap times are similar, then they may end up integrating the series. Remember when with British Superbikes a few years ago, there were the full fat superbikes, and then there were the, I can't remember what class they called it. The name has gone from me. There'll be one or two people shouting into the headphones now. When they had the spec ECUs, when they were starting to bring in the Motex and saying this is how we're going to run BSB next year. The name of the class escapes me. But if they can run them both together under the same banner, that I think will be the ultimate goal. And then it will take its natural course then for wherever the teams want to go. Ultimately, as you rightly say, it's down to affordability. And the cheaper these bikes become, the more likely they are to make it into a British Championship Series. So for now, the Japanese four-cylinder production bikes will be the dominant force, and there's no reason why it won't be Kennedy and Seeley running the show again. Hopefully Ben Wilson will come to the fore, the likes of Brad Jones, who's signed again with Appleyard McAdam to partner. Jack Kennedy can come forward, young riders like Tom Oliver, guys like that. You know, hopefully the championship will be a lot closer this year, even despite the departure of Ben Curry. So, yeah, the potential is certainly there. The championship doesn't tell you the full story. Eugene McManus started the season with a win, but then he disappeared off back into Moto3. Young Shane Faber did a couple of rounds. It was only really Josh Owens, Joel Borboom, and Mike Browers that did the whole season. Thomas De Vries as well. So three of those are Dutchies that came across to contest the championship. But actually for young British riders, we were few and far between. So hopefully next year the young guys, as I say, the youngsters coming out of Moto3, I think will progress onto a Moto2 bike because it's actually an easier transition than going from, as I've experienced in the past with Jordan Weaving, going from his customer KTM to a ZX6R stock 600. It's a massive, massive change. It's a flexible chassis. He's on cut tires, is on treaded tires, you know, there's an awful, it's not just the power and the weight, it's the whole feel of the motorcycle. Whereas if you're moving from a Moto 3 to a Moto 2, you still have the rigid frame, you still have the prototype machinery, it might not, and the slick tires, it might be a more progressive step forward if you're still awake after that diatribe.
I haven't been following it because I think, you know, as far as I can tell, and like I say, I haven't been able to really find a good interview with the powers that be where they talk about the rationale of bringing GP2 bikes in. You know, initially I thought there was this sense that we're going to try and bring in GP2 bikes to replace ultimately the Supersport 600s, because there was this sense that, you know, we need a mid-weight class. No question we need a mid-weight class. But with manufacturers not making a range of 600s, you know, we're just turning into what was becoming and has become the Yamaha Cup. So yeah, there was this sense, agreed, of the GP2. But the more that it's gone on this year, I personally have now looked at it, and I could, like I say, I mean, the powers that could be could say this is wrong, but I've looked at it as saying, this is, to my mind, this is more about us being able to have a category of Moto2 GP bikes that British riders can go onto as a sort of learning, holding pool to allow them to step up to Moto2 at a world level, or, you know, potentially even like a CEV, CIV or something like that, easier than going from, you know, the Supersport bikes. So they looked at that and they said, well, we want to have a Moto2. It's not never going to be big enough for a standalone race series. So we've integrated it into the 600s. I don't think they'll ever really be necessarily competitive enough to challenge the top Supersport 600 riders. And right now, the whole GP2, you know, based on the old Honda 600 Moto2 bikes as well. I mean, this year was the last season. So this year will be logically the best Moto2 bikes. There'll be a set number of those once they're bought up by the most well-funded teams. That's it. You know, you if you want to come and compete next year or next year, you're kind of very, very limited to the machinery. You're even limited to the engines that you can use, you know, the Honda 600 engines. So it didn't seem as a reason, you know, that it would go on to replace Supersport 600s. I think, like I say, for me now, it's just proven as it's an environment where, like you say, riders that have come up on the Moto3 side of things can progress onto a Moto2, and that right now, that's the closest machinery that, you know, we can run in Britain to help prepare future British riders move on to the new, you know, Moto2.
Just to play devil's advocate on that, because that's what we do, that hasn't worked on a Moto3 level, has it?
Well, not recently, no.
The guys that have gone on that have won MotoStar over the last few years, your Taran McKenzie's, Charlie Nesbitt's, your Tom Bouthamos. Tom Bouthamos has got his chance in Moto3 next year. On what level of competitive machinery, I'm not sure. And just not speaking out of turn, speaking purely from, I don't know the guy, it's nothing personal. I'm still not sure what the actual pace of Tom Bouthamos is. He hasn't ripped up an awful lot of trees in CEV this year, which was supposed to be his stepping stone into Moto3 GPs. The guys that have won in previous times have run off into the distance. So far, of the guys that have won Moto3 over the last 5 years, Taran McKenzie at the moment is the most successful. He's the one that has gone on to Supersport, to winning the Supersport title, as he did with the Monster Kame Yamaha team. And then progressing into McCams and then into the British Superbike podium. You look at Charlie Nesbitt, who won it a couple of years ago. He went out to CEV, and by the end of last season, he was in British Supersport. You know, I know finances run a long way with that, and we know that that Taran also had a dabble with Moto2, somewhat unsuccessfully. Which also shows the level of competition at that end, and, you know, particularly the level of machinery that Taran was on. So there's a huge amount of variables. I'm not blind to that in any way, shape or form. Nothing is ever what it seems in motorcycle racing. What it looks like on the surface, as you well know, behind the scenes, it is something completely different. Some of the stories you hear from the paddocks and how guys have to do what they do, and nothing's ever what it seems. It is motorcycle racing is one of the biggest versions of a hall of smoke and mirrors, hall of the hall of mirrors and smoke that you'll ever come across. So I'm not stupid enough to think that everything is what it seems. It isn't. But I'd like to see the levels that the guys that are doing Moto3. When you see Jake Archer running off into the distance on the City Lifting bike this year, just as Tom Booth Amos did last year, those bikes are outstanding. They are the top of the range bikes for that championship, and those riders are getting on it and they're doing the business. Both Jake Archer and Jack Scott last season. So does that give them a false impression of their levels of riding, or do we need to make Moto3 more competitive to be able to give our riders that edge? And conversely, the same in this Moto2 championship that's coming through, we need to take those levels further and make them more competitive so they can succeed on the world stage. Looking at what Jake Archer did this year, I don't think he's GP level. Looking at what Tom Booth Amos did last year, I damn sure hope I'm wrong. But at the point, I don't see what Tom Booth Amos has done yet to prove as a GP rider and to bring the results in since he left Moto3 on the best bike in the series. Cool, that was deep, wasn't it?
And I was also just thinking too, as I was just sat back thinking about the whole, people who ride road bikes just don't get opportunities in the GP paddock. And then I thought, of course, except Jake Dixon.
Yeah, exactly. Jake had done the right thing by having Frankie Carchedi as his manager. You need people in that paddock to be able to work on your behalf. Whether it was Roger Burnett for Sam Lowe's, and James Toseland, he was working that paddock for an awful lot of years. Scott did it on talent and his time in Spain, so he worked his way there a different route. Sam went through World Supersport, as did Cal through World Supersport, World Superbike, and his monster sponsorship. So there's a path been made for riders. They've had the talent to take that path and to make it their own. And I really hope Tom Booth Amos does the same thing. I'm not sure of the level of competitiveness of the bike that he's going to be on, but he's got his chance. And I really hope he takes it. I'm just not 100% convinced that he'll achieve the level he needs to achieve. And that would be really sad for him and for the waving the flag for British racing.
I think you definitely made the point about contacts in the paddock. You know, I've sometimes wondered, in the same way we have a VR46 Academy, and if in a few years' time, when the time is right, we can't have a CC35 Academy in the UK, such that, you know, there is someone with contacts in the paddock, and, you know, it becomes like a sort of a collection point for sponsors and...
Sure.
Picking, and therefore, you know, sort of picks the you know, there's a, in the same way, I think, where they sort of have a good eye for picking out the right riders, there's this sense, therefore, that, you know, the right riders with the right skill and talent get connected with the right sponsorship and, you know, nutrition training and all the other sort of elements that you need to put together what these days is a competitive rider. I think right now, sometimes you have riders who get opportunities, and it may not just be, you know, may not be based purely on their own riding skill. It might just be based on the fact that they have sort of, you know, good business and connections and other people in their team advocating for them. But it does also mean that that's an opportunity that perhaps, you know, goes to waste. I don't know if that's quite the right word to say.
No,
you know,
I'm trying to avoid, that statement.
Another rider potentially who you kind of thought, well, you know, if you'd had that rider with those same connections, given that same opportunity.
Same rider, different connections, different opportunities, different results.
And then there's a friend of mine who always says, if then buts and maybes are like cans.
Oh, yeah, remember. If Ipsum Butts were pots and pans.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's exactly that. You know, I don't have a downer on Tom Boothamos by any stretch of the imagination. I just wonder where his level is. And I want to see him reach the best of his level. But whether he's doing it the right way or not at the moment will remain to be seen. Whether he can break top 20, top 15, I don't suspect he'll break top 10, but certainly top 20, top 15 and progression as you go. And the same for Jake Dixon. Different kettle of fish completely. He's proven his racecraft. Tom Boothamos came in late. I think he came in through Supermoto. He came to road racing fairly late. So he's got his chance now, and I hope he seizes it with both hands. And we shall report back on him next season as well.
Yeah. So just thinking now, given how long we've been wittering on, trying to bring some of this,
break this down into
to a close to kind of bring some sweet relief to our poor, long-suffering listeners. I just wondered, is there anything else you wanted to touch on from the 2018 season?
Overall, as we said at the end of Brands Hatch, it's been a great season. I think as we look across the board, yes, there's been difficulties in World Superbikes. MotoGP's been a great season. And in true MotoPod tradition, next season is going to be the best season ever.
So, yeah, anything else you want to talk about? Or shall we just say, you know, anything you're looking forward to for next year outside of the BSB, you know, for some of the supporting series?
I think it's until the teams are confirmed for next season, yeah, it's going to be a little bit difficult. I mean, Honda, as well as signing Andy Irwin and Xavi Forres, Honda have signed Tom Neve, one of the Neve twins from just up the road from me, a little place called Owenby by Spittle, just off the A15 in the middle of Lincolnshire, a farming family, no less. Surprise, surprise. They've been mentored by Guy Martin. They were running under Guy Martin's racing banner last season before they were picked up by various teams and given the opportunities, as Tom was in British Superbike with Honda and latterly with Mavuno Halsall Racing. Now, Tom is riding the Superstock Honda as they return to the British Superstock Championship after a year or two out. His twin brother Tim has been signed by Morello Racing, Steve Buckingham's outfit from rural Norfolk. They've signed Chrissy Rouse and Tim Neve. There's talk of OMG Racing running a Superstock bike. At the moment, there's no news as to who will be on it if they do run it. Originally, that was solely for the use of Josh Elliott, but as we spoke about earlier, has since now been promoted to the Superbike squad. Will they run one? Won't they run one? We'll have to wait and see. I think that could be a particularly competitive... That's either going to be a Neve shootout, or hopefully, you know, Chrissy Rouse will get involved and maybe one or two others. My old, not protege, that's far too much of a grand word. My old mate from his Moto 3 days and his early Stock 600 days, Jordan Weaving, he's looking to run his own bike next season. Was having a bit of a chat with him at the bike show / motorcycle live. He's hopefully running his own ZX10 next season. Back to basics for him after a pretty horrendous couple of seasons in Stock 1000 for a multitude of reasons. Hopefully he can find a smile back for his racing and become competitive. Stock 1000's looking really lively. Stock 600 could be anybody's. Again, it depends who comes up into Stock 6 and who goes on to Moto 2. Outside of the British Superbike paddock, it's quite open for MotoGP. I'm one of the very few fully paid up Jorge Lorenzo fans out there, just to really wind up my daughter and my girlfriend, who are both, you know, true Valentino Rossi fans and give me such a ridiculous amount of stick for being a Jorge Lorenzo fan. I sent Emily a picture of Lorenzo from Jerez. On one of the right-handers, he was fully lent over, looks really comfortable on the bike, and I just sent her the picture with the love heart eye emojis, and she just sent me back a roll eye emoji and a thumb down. So, yeah. It'd be good to see if the Yamahas can get going. I think Maverick Vinales, he'll be, I think he will be more of a threat next year than this year. Obviously, he always likes to win testing. That's always been one of his goals, but hopefully the words coming out from there mean that he will be a lot more competitive next season, and hopefully that will drag Valentino Rossi on as well.
Well, it sounds like for Yamaha, though, they still have their issue with their engine, and this was surprising to me. I guess it shouldn't be, but you know, the testing they've just done at I think it was at Jerez, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were at Jerez.
That was essentially, for all of the teams, that was their engine test. Literally had to make the decision of, you know, this is what we've bought, you've run it, you have to make the decision, because that's it now. That will be
but
your engine.
But there's only Valentino that wasn't convinced
for
by
good
the engine.
Or for bad.
Maverick seemed really convinced.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he said it was better, but it's not what he wanted, from what I understood.
But it was an advance on this year. But hopefully they can use some of the electronics as well.
Yeah. That's right, because now they've got the new electronic tech guy, Michel Dana or whatever his name is.
Caradi?
Yeah, it's kind of coming on,
Corrado,
on stream.
Something like, yeah. Who came across from Pata World Superbikes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and originally from that, he was from Ducati GP, and it was Ducati GP that basically provided all the software for the spec electronics. So
it was, yeah. They basically set all the parameters for the ECU, didn't they?
Well, because, I mean, they were looking for volunteers, and Honda declined, so Ducati said, well, you can use ours as the base. So Honda had some input into some of the functionality and the features they wanted, but it was actually essentially Ducati code. So yeah, they instantly gave themselves a huge leg up. I think Honda sort of missed the boat a little bit on that one.
But not as much as Yamaha did.
No, exactly. Well, and then even worse, because as soon as that happened, Honda started hiring Ducati electronic engineers like it was going out of fashion.
That's right.
And by the time Yamaha thought, yeah, actually, you know what, that could be a bit of a good idea. I don't think there's any left.
Looking into the saloon and it's empty.
Yeah, exactly.
It's exactly that. No, it's going to... It has the potential. It does. All joking and on Motopod... traditions aside, the whole season has the potential to be fantastic. I don't want another Marc Marquez runaway season. I don't think Marc Marquez wants a Marc Marquez runaway season. I think everybody likes the fight in motorcycle racing. It's why they're there. I think if you ask any racer, do you want to win a race by 0.3 of a second, or do you want to win it by 10 seconds?
You say a Marquez runaway season. Like, I'm thinking back, he's definitely like won some races, but some of the ones he's had to win, he's really had to push.
He's won it. So, what? I'm not for 1 minute saying, you know, as a runaway, as in for victory. It was all wrapped up by Motegi, wasn't it? Still,
well, yeah, points wise for sure. But I mean, that was partly because, he had the consistency. That word again. That the others didn't have. But I mean, it certainly wasn't like previous, you know, I can still remember, I'm showing my age now, but I can still remember, GPs where, yeah, the winner would be crossing the line 20, 30 seconds ahead of second place man, you know. So when people talk about runaway wins, I guess that's what I still envisage. You talk to the youngsters nowadays, you know, they're probably talking about 2 or 3 second.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a different age, you know.
But what I was... maybe it's my poorly executed way of explaining it, but to have won the title by Motegi,
yeah,
and when there's still Phillip Island, Sepang, and Valencia to go, I would love it to go down to Sepang, to Valencia,
yeah,
or at least Sepang, go a little, you know, a couple of races further into the season. Before we know who's going to do what. That's what I meant by the runaway winner, three races before the end of the season, you know, and it's a long season again, isn't it? It's 19 races.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is like you've got, you know, Marquez is just, he seems to just be able to, he's kind of on his own, and he often seems to just, you know, take the healthier points where the other finishing are all sort of shared up against, you know, 2, 3, 4 different riders. So, you know, they're all kind of those other following riders all scrapping over the remainder of the points where, you know, he doesn't have like one person necessarily. It's like they all sort of just get in each other's way. And I think in some respects, they make his life a little easier.
Well, they do. Look at Sepang when, you know, Valentino fell off, you know, a couple of laps from the end.
Yeah, oh my God.
You know,
it's... Oh, the world cried.
The internet broke.
I know, I'm sure you know, but, like I say, some close
But that's the thing, you know,
sad with that.
Whether he would have won the race or not, or whether, you know, I know Valentino was coming back to him step by step. But like you say, the consistency of the others wasn't there. And that's been Mark's strongest armour.
Recently, isn't it? He's learned how to be consistent.
The last two seasons.
Yeah.
He really isn't making the mistakes in the races.
Well, I think he's been more selective about when he rides over the edge. I think he did...
Over the top of people.
Like, yeah, so many... Yeah. He had a few too many races where I think he was riding at 103%, a bit too much of the race. Whereas I think we've seen him, you know, stalk people and just pull out that 103% for the last four or five laps.
Yeah. And then you look what happened in Argentina when the old red mist got going and he was the biggest bully ever to set foot on a racetrack.
Yeah. And they unnecessarily overdid it.
Turning point.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. And that was, I think, for me, the turning point in his season. He realized he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
He was faster than anybody out there anyway. And he was never as ragged as that ever again.
No. He didn't even pull it out in that race, you know. Yeah. Definitely learning.
I think that was a huge education for Marc Márquez in his career, that race. And the fallout from what came afterwards, you know, I think that was his biggest wake up call over the last two or three seasons, and one that will kick on from that. So it's now up to everybody else to catch up, to Dovizioso, to Lorenzo, to Vinales, to Rossi, Petrucci, anybody who can really get in there. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Oh, you could keep going for another couple of hours, couldn't you?
What the listeners do, dear listeners, if you are still with us and you're still awake and you're still enjoying the show, Andrew and I do also talk off air as well. So we do have an hour and a half catch up every now and again. It isn't just this show. We do this on a regular basis. We could talk for hours about motorcycle
and
racing.
Believe it or not, I do even actually get a word in edgeways. Occasionally, just occasionally.
Now you're making me feel bad.
I do want to say, though, a huge thank you to you for joining us this 2018. Having us all kept up to date with all the BSB comings and goings, the gossip, the news, you know, the race reports, they actually being there as well. I mean, it's added a huge extra dynamic and a huge extra quality to all the shows. I personally have really enjoyed catching up with you and having a natter. It's kind of an added plus that we can record some of this, chop it together and throw it out for other people to listen to. So a huge thank you to you for 2018, and very best wishes for a good Christmas, a happy new year and a good 2019.
Absolutely my pleasure. Every time we come on, it's always a pleasure to chat to you about it. It's nice to have someone who listens and understands and shares the passion for BSB, and hopefully that comes across to the listeners as well. I hope you guys out there in Motopod land enjoy listening to it. Please let us know, motopod@motopodcast.com. I will get that right one day. Andrew, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the editing that yourself and Len do. And I look forward to doing it all again next year.
Cheers, Dave. Have a good evening.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, mate. Have a great Christmas and a happy new year.
You too. Cheers, buddy.